and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling Art with Chris Things.
Do the hammer lock.
Welcome back. We've got another edition of Wrestling Art with Chris Things. I am Chris. I am your host, your pal, your wrestling art dude. And we're back for another match of the week edition. I am very, very excited about today's episode. Talking two matches that are slightly different. In terms of exploding barbed wire land bomb double danger death match from FMW from the mid 90s in Kawasaki Stadium, and bloody incredible AEW main event from the most recent pay-per-view in Danielson against Swerve for the world title at Wembley. Golly, two slightly different matches there, but I love them both. And I've got my best mate in the whole wide world, David, who now resides on the other side of the world in England, but we're thankfully still able to catch up thanks to this little old pay-per-view. So we're going to be chopping it up, talking about our thoughts on those two matches a little bit later in the show here. Matches that I illustrated as well, might I say. I did the arts of these the last couple of weeks as my match of the week deal. Posted those on my Instagram. They're also available to peruse and purchase on christhings.com.au, so you can check them out yourself. You can see the visualization of these matches as we discuss them if you feel like. But looking forward to that later on in the show. But for now, we've got our, what's going on in the wild world of Chris Things segment. And we've had a bit of a wild ride lately up to this point. And then I was loading up my calendar for later in the year. And from about October onwards, we get pretty nutty. We have all sorts of things. If you head to the events page of my website, you'll be able to see what I'm talking about. But all the things from the next great artist market that I was just able to add onto the site after it was officially announced start of this week. So very excited to be that. Going back to Felon's Barrel Hall in Brisbane here for just an awesome daytime event. Very stoked about that, to be back at the great artist market. Appreciative to be part of it as well. This will be my third one in a row. And this thing, there are 70 artists, so you think there's a lot there, but apparently there's a heck of a lot more people than that apply to be part of this thing. So it's not lost on me that I do feel very very appreciative to be a part of that. And likewise for what I have the next night in that self-portrait art show that I was talking about last time, the House Full of Heads. Very stoked to be part of that one. A little bit nervous about doing my own self-portrait for that one. But we'll see how we go. And then, we get on to a bunch of other stuff. Lucha Fantastica in Melbourne, which I'm very, very happy again to be back on board with Señor Fantastico for the big Melbourne event at Collingwood Town Hall. And then we go on to November, where I'm going to be doing the Supernova, where I'm launching a very special... what can I say here? I don't want to give it away too much. Very special, let's say a comic, let's say a picture book, let's not say too much for. But I'm very excited about this one. It's something that will probably make sense to everybody once I do the announcement. But yeah, I hope everyone and digs it, and hope it's going to be a nice thing. I don't know how it's going to go. This will be my first ever Supernova, which is like a Comic-Con kind of event. So I don't know whether that's going to end up like, you know, my people. But you only can find these things out by doing them. So it's a bit of an experiment. And then after that, we have a massive December of the Oddities and Curiosities Expo. So very excited about that. And that December is going to be absolutely nuts. Going to be in a different state each weekend. two-day, all-day affairs, and just back-to-back-to-back-to-back, traveling all over this country, selling my art. That's what I like to do. And then the start of October, I'm actually doing a lovely little trip to Vietnam with my dad, which I'm super excited about. You know, dad's getting a bit older up there in age. So, you know, for me, this kind of thing of getting to spend some one-on-one time with him like that, you know, both of us going to Vietnam for the first time ever, it's going to be a lovely, lovely thing. So I'm definitely looking forward to that as much as I have a little bit of, you know, guilt or nerves, or I don't know about, you know, taking that amount of time out of my art practice. Still going to be doing stuff when I'm over there. I'm going to make sure that I'm you know, doing a lot of stuff on my you know, art book. Going to be probably working on some different projects whilst I'm on the go. But yeah, there's a little bit of a pang of like, Chris, you should be doing more. This is your time to do everything, and I often feel that. But yeah, as I've said before, I think it's important that we do take a breath sometimes, yeah, it's okay to not be feeling like you have to be working all the time. But speaking of working all the time, you may have noticed I have a bit of a gap in September for events and all of the things, and that has actually worked out very well. Because I'm basically going to be spending this September working on an exciting new book project. So I have to be a bit mysterious. I can't tell you the official deets of it just yet. But I've just done up the first sort of like concept illustration to work out the stylistic approach for this project with my much loved publisher, and yeah, I'm very excited to be doing that. So I'm blocking it out. I still have some other commission pieces to my much loved and cherished commission clients that I'm going to be doing at the same time, but at least in terms of events, I thought it was important to try to, you know, keep those to a minimum so I can put all this focus on this big thing. Looking like about 50 illustrations that I'll be doing for this project. Probably a bit more. These things always end up a little bit more. But yeah, I'm very excited about it, and I think you guys will be too. It's a weird thing. Who bloody knows when, you know, this will be announced or you know, when it eventually comes out. And I'm still hanging on to see when this AEW edition of Way of the Blade will be coming out, since that's all done. Hopefully that's not too much further. But yeah, you don't really know these things. So all you can do is like, all right, we've done our part, and then it's in the hands of the, you know, the big decision makers when the rest of the things happen. But I hope it's before too long. As soon as I get the word, at least for the announcement side of it, I'm very enthused to share this with you. It's something that I feel very thankful to be part of. It's a project of just, you know, probably not pulling the curtain too much by telling you it's a wrestling project, but yeah, in terms of wrestling and illustration, this stuff that I'm getting to do for this book is very, very near to my heart. And I think that's when the best stuff happens. It's stuff that you are passionate about. It's stuff that you have a you know, proper pride that you take in what you're doing, and it's a joyous process. So I feel very lucky to be a part of it from that perspective. You know, this whole thing of making this art deal my full-time job, being my life's dream, you know, a lot of it comes back to that thing that we always hear of, you know, if you're doing what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. I can say that's not entirely true, because as part of this art stuff, there's a lot that you have to do that's not actually making the art and doing the drawing, doing the paintings and all that. There's a lot of other more business-oriented, less exciting stuff that you have to do and think about. I think if we can focus on the, man, it's so cool that I'm getting to do this thing, then I think that goes a long way. So yeah, that's about it for today. It's kind of, I use this start bit of the show as sort of like a personal journal, I guess. You know, I don't know if you guys get that much out of just hearing me ramble in this manner. But I feel like, I don't know, maybe this is something I can go back to and can be an interesting way of documenting my art career, of like where I was at week by week. That's what I'm trying to do here. So if you find that interesting, then great. If this is all you listen to on the podcast, then great. If you skip this bit, great. Whatever, however you want to do it. But I'm having fun, and I feel very, very grateful to be able to be doing this stuff. Hopefully more cool stuff to come. But immediately to come, right now, is a little old match of the week goodness with David. Let's throw over to the Skype studio here. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're back for another match of the week, a doubleheader match of the week, in fact, and one that I'm positively delighted to be talking about both of these matches with my best mate in the whole wide world, David. Welcome to the show, my dude.
Good morning. How are we all? Well, I hope.
I think so.
Yeah, good to be here again.
Cool, dude. Yeah. I don't think there's anyone in the world I'd more prefer to be talking about this specific combination of matches with than yourself, because it's a bit of an odd combination of matches.
Yeah, it is, honestly. Like, one, we've got the Funkster in one, and then we've got on the other side of the spectrum, we've got Daniel Bryan and Swerve Strickland.
Yeah.
So, you know, either way, I'm happy.
Yeah, the bloody FMW exploding barbed wire Kawasaki Stadium match. And the main event of the AEW's most recent pay-per-view, All In, at bloody Wembley Stadium. Two slightly different matches. I'd say there's some similarities in some ways.
Finding the differences is it's nuanced, I think.
Yes, very very much so.
Don't ask me to spell nuanced. I don't know.
Great word.
Yeah, thanks, man. So tucking into these two was a bit of a whiplash, a bit of whiplash going from one match directly to the other.
So can I ask, did you watch them legitimately one and then immediately the next?
I watched the exploding barbed wire death match with Terry Funk, Hayabusa, Mr. fucking Pogo. Oh, and Tanaka, Masato.
Can't forget Tanaka.
No, my man. He's got that sweet, like, sexy mullet. Those were good. Yeah, and then I watched one of the matches in the unification, or one of the unification matches between Nigel McGuinness and Daniel Bryan.
Ooh, nice, interesting.
Yes, yeah. So I watched the first one. I wanted to watch it kick off. I was just gonna like that's got to be my favorite series of matches, like between two people. And so whenever I'm kind of like expecting like a big blow off to a feud or a big title kind of thing between two people where it's built, that's kind of like not my benchmark because it's a pretty fucking high bar, but it's what I kind of look for things in, where they're taking things throughout a series of matches, and then when it comes to the end of it, like how they capitalize on all those things, how they felt each other out as wrestlers. And then I jumped into the Swerve Strickland and Bryan Danielson match.
I mean, good timing with the Nigel one. I mean, if you were to say, like you're saying, you know, your favorite Danielson opponent is Nigel, that is not a bad answer at all. And of all shows, this were you aware that old Nigel made his comeback earlier in the card on this event?
And I was so happy. I was so fucking happy.
Right.
I was clapping like a drunk seal.
Do you remember us watching that? Did we watch that Nigel documentary about his like the end of his career together back in the day?
Yes. Yeah. I think we watched it with Davis.
Yes. Yes. At Davis's house.
And we just kind of sat there all quiet. We're just like, why are we doing this to ourselves?
Possibly one of the most depressing wrestling documentaries of all time.
I know. I put it up there as like, what are their names? I just had a massive brain fart. The brothers.
Up there, the Von Erichs.
Yeah. Sadder than the Von Erichs.
I mean, I guess you can say the saddest where like the main characters don't all die in the end.
Yeah. Oh. Rest in peace, Von Erichs, by the way. I don't mean that as a joke. I love those people. I love those guys as wrestlers. But yeah, there's some things when sad documentaries come around and you actively sit down to watch them and like make a choice. The only thing that could have been worse is if you had watched that by yourself.
Yes. Yeah, at least we had each other, really.
Yeah.
Man, I swear, I think my favorite part of that documentary is the bit when Nigel is like asking himself, like, you know, all things considered, would he do it again? And you expect him to be like, you know, the classic wrestler answer of like, yeah, wouldn't change a goddamn thing. And he's like, no, I could do it again. Absolutely not.
No. No, under no circumstances would I ever make that fucking mistake again. And look at him now.
Look at him now.
Making that mistake again. It's the itch, man. It never gets away from you.
Oh, from a very selfish perspective, if we get the rematch against Danielson as, you know, maybe Danielson's last match in AEW, I think that would be quite excellent.
Yeah, that would be great. I at least hope they do, like, when he whips him into the post and he just takes it face first. God, that's such a hard thing to watch, where he just runs into it. And it's just like, mate, why did you do this to yourself?
Man, that match is something else, watching it with the benefit of hindsight, the Liverpool one.
Yeah, yeah, mate. Oh, Jesus. But anyway, back to these two matches. Danielson, obviously, like a legendary wrestler, like 25 years in the ring, wrestling in matches.
Just an all-time river career.
He's just always been in, like, he's always been in great shape. He's always just put on, like, phenomenal matches. Like, he's never tried to go, like, break the mold in a lot of senses. But then, like, as he's just doing match for match. But then when he goes on, like, a streak or when he's in a feud, he just absolutely ups it to the next level. Like, I just think he understands, like, the storytelling aspect.
Oh, man. And in terms of being, like, a big match wrestler, like, I don't think there's anyone going today that's, like, that level of, like, really pulls it out, like, in terms of having those big-time, epic kind of matches.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he just, like, my favourite thing about him is, like, when he wrestles in feuds.
Mm.
Like, takes on, like, multiple matches with the same person who's working a story with with the same person. I just think he's, I think he understands storytelling on like a far greater level than like most wrestlers, even the other top notch guys. I just think he can tell a story better than other guys.
Oh, absolutely. And I think this was so, like, in front of such a massive building as, like, Wembley, with, like, and just captivating everyone and, like, acting like this fucking maestro, like, pulling everyone's strings. And, yeah, just, like, telling a fucking beautiful story. I don't think it gets much better than that.
No, just being able to milk, like, or just being able to take, like, both the wrestlers, obviously, like, Swerve Strickland is meant to be, like, this big, dangerous guy in AEW who doesn't hold anything to heart, or doesn't hold anything sacred, so he just goes after absolutely anything that someone has in order to play like the mental game with them.
Ruthless.
Yeah, just absolutely. He's without Ruth. He never knew her. but yeah, so, and then having that play off Danielson's like love for his family, and then kind of working that, not just like having that at the start of a match, wrestling a match, and then having a bit at the end. Like, he works it in, like,
in just the best of ways.
Every aspect. Yeah, so he's not like overdoing it. He's just really like using it to get through the match and then make a comeback. So I think, yeah, just how he can tell simple things in a story like that. He doesn't try and add too much in, like of all other aspects. He picks one thing and he just runs with it for the entirety of the match.
Oh, for sure. And when I look at this, I look at sort of the, you know, them telling the story of, like, he's doing it. It's, like, the love of his family that's, like, driving him on to, like, go above and beyond, you know, all this crazy shit and to finally win, like, the biggest match of his career. And you think of that story and, like, imagine that in the context of, like, what we're used to with a lot of, like, contemporary wrestling these days, of a lot of what we see in AEW or like fucking WWE or that like NXT trash, and man, it's like, it could be such a cringe, like eye rolling kind of thing, like, oh, he's doing it for his family, you know, like,
yeah.
And it could so easily be one of those bullshit wrestling melodrama fucking cringe things that I hate so much, but in this example with Danielson, he got it just perfect, like just right. There was no moment where I was like, oh, come on, this is like a bit much. Like, even the biggest kind of moments of him like reaching towards his like family and then like Swerve coming in with that fucking like knee or like the kick thing. I just thought no matter what, they worked it to just the perfect level to where it told a beautiful story and got everyone like sucked in, but it wasn't to the level of being like a bullshit cringy kind of deal.
Yeah, they definitely. That's just it. Like, him working the family angle isn't disingenuous for him. Like, it's actually, it seems like a lot of what he's portrayed in like social media and what he's portrayed his life to be.
Yeah.
It is very family centric. So
much reality.
For him to like bring that little bit into the ring, I think is just, you know, it's not out of place. Like, if you're gonna suddenly get someone like, oh shit, I don't know, Vince McMahon come in and go like, I'm doing this for my family.
Oh, yeah.
It's a bit I've always been the cornerstone of my family. I'm the rock that holds them all together. But, you know, that's disingenuous. But having someone like Daniel Bryan do it. And not just lather it on overly thick. Like, he uses it in the story more than he kind of lets it on at the start of the match when there's like that little photo, when there's that little like video package.
Yeah.
And then it goes into the match. He's using it. So, but there's still like the fight there. It doesn't just go over the top. At one point you've got your obligatory run in, which is good.
I mean, the way they did it was good, because I was concerned, you know, you get this big, beautiful story, this like amazing match, and then it's so like AEW booking of late to like, all right, we've got so much good going on. Let's find a way to ruin it.
Let's find a way to throw someone else in there quickly, like shit in the soup, and then leave.
But I thought the way they did this was like, they obviously wanted Hangman to be a part of it, because, you know, they're going straight back to the big Hangman versus Swerve story for the All Out pay-per-view. So they needed to sort of like advance that a little bit, I guess. And I would have been way hesitant about, you know, any sort of direct interference, but the way that they did it of him just sort of like being there, not getting like actually physically involved, the security all that running out to show the importance of this match and like not wanting to let this match be like ruined, and then the fact that, you know, Danielson catching him off guard as a result of that wasn't directly the finish. You know, it was a key part of the story, but it didn't go directly into the finish, so it wasn't like he won it entirely just because of Hangman or anything like that. I thought the way it was done was very good.
Yeah, I did. I absolutely hate it when there's an interference. Like, to be fair, interferences, if it has an angle to the story, yeah, sure, good. But it's when they get in the ring and when they change it right at the last second, and then the person wins because of it. It's just the biggest, like, especially titles. Like, it should be, the match should be on such like another level, where if someone comes in, interferes with your match, you take the hit. If you can kick out of, like, if you're getting to the point where you're kicking out of like power bombs, you're kicking out of like people's big finishes. If you get like hit by one person's like random thing, and then you go down to it. Like, I think it's just lazy. I think it's just because they couldn't finish of like a clean, interesting way to finish the match.
Or they're looking for like a, you know, an out to be able to get a finish where you're protecting a guy booking wise, so he doesn't have to take a clean job, you know. And it's like, oh well, it's off of that, and that's like an example of just a shitty booker right there.
Yeah, but it's like that exactly. Like, booking around that is just so easy. Like, have the people. I genuinely work for it. Like, if you've got two people in a title match, these people can already go the distance. Let them come up with what they want to do, and then don't just, you know, I know it's like, I know everyone kind of has a little part in it when it comes to interferences, and people have to either work around it or they kind of get saddled with it and like, oh fuck, this guy's going to run and we've got to do something with him.
Like, oh yeah, make the best of it.
But even then, I just think it's, you know, it's something that should be done either like in the first half or three quarters of the match, but nowhere near the end. It shouldn't be. To me, it's just an absolute, like, I just throw my hands up in the air. Even if someone wins the title as a result of that, even if it's a wrestler I really want to win the title, if they win as a result of, like, a run-in, I just throw my hands up in the air in complete disinterest.
Well, same. Any big match that you've, like, put a lot into to get people invested in, you know, people have, like, paid a lot of money for, like, a ticket or, like, to buy a pay-per-view for this or whatever, and then to have that kind of, like, Vince Russo shitty fucking booking with, like, you know, interference or something like that, it just feels like such a slap in the face and makes you feel like an idiot for getting invested in this match in the first place, to me. So that's again, I think we're both preaching to the choir here of like why I think for big matches you shouldn't have that stuff. And but yeah, I thought for this example they walked that tightrope pretty well.
Yeah, the whole time I was like, don't get in the ring, don't get in the ring, don't get in the ring, don't get in the ring. And yeah, he didn't. So it was all good. There was a little bit of scuffle where he got to throw people around, but that was pretty much it. So yeah, so moving upwards and onwards from that, it left the match to kind of be untarnished, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, we guess we did have Nana in the early part of the match put the bell on the apron. But again, I guess to me that's like a good fine line of like, it's not like they're doing the bullshit of like, where if Nana's like pulling Swerve's leg, you know, to break up the pin or you know, something like that. Like, just putting this thing there is more of a sneaky bastard kind of thing rather than, yeah, something that's too outrageous, I guess.
Yeah, and again, on the level of like people interfering with a match, people interfering and then it changing the whole dynamic of the match is one thing, whereas people like interfering as opposed to help to help a wrestler win more who's already on top and going like, oh hey, use this as well, and then they use that and it's like a quick little, you know, thing where the other guy just, he's winning more or he gets further ahead. It hasn't flipped the whole match on its head, which I know like a lot of people love. I know a lot of people go like, oh, I ran in, now the whole match is reset. It's just like, well, good. Like, you know, if I was cheating in a match, I'll be doing it when I'm on top, when I can distract the referee, when I can do other things, when I can get someone to come in and cheat for me, when I've got complete control. Like, when if people lose control of the match, it's when they start to break down. So I don't understand. Yeah, again, the whole aspect of people, like the run-ins and the distractions and all that kind of stuff. Sometimes it's just can be. I think now I just get irritated more and more because it's been overdone.
Yeah,
like every show, it's got one or two. You know, you've always got a run in. But I suppose it's give the live audience like some background story too, but or some background story too, or something to look forward to. But yeah, again, yeah, preaching to the choir. So
yeah, I really loved sort of like we're talking about the story of this match and the way that, you know, obviously early on they made a big deal of, you know, Danielson's family being at ringside and his fucking adorable children. Like, so adorable.
Gives his little kids a kiss like as he walks out to the ring. And I was just like, oh, you're such a lovely man. Gives his wife a hug. Doesn't even do that weird thing where they just give him the grab and make out with him. Just gives his wife a hug. It's like, there you go.
Maybe they had a fight that morning.
Kids get a kid, get a hug.
Oh, but yeah, then they're sort of like keeping on coming. I guess not doing a whole. I mean, I guess they did the thing early on when Swerve was beaten on him in front of them. Like, he specifically took him to the outside to do that in front of him. And then I guess the bit when, yeah, he's, like I was saying, I think my favourite actual part of the match was the part where it really, told the main bit of that story of, like, the love of his family was what kept him going, and he's, like, looking at them, and that was, I guess, the moment of the match that I chose for the illustration was where he's I think been having his ass kicked by Swerve. He's got the blood, you know, all great blade job, blood all coming down, Crimson Mask City, and he's hit something. He's got a brief reprieve from the attack of Swerve, and he just has that moment where he like looks over to his family, and it's sort of like you can see him like he's get his will to like he has to like fight for them kind of deal.
Yeah.
I was like that is the fucking moment, and you know, I think Swerve was like just off in the background a little bit, so he wasn't a big part of it, but I mean, I think this match was all about Danielson, you know, and so I thought that was appropriate for the illustration.
Yeah, I think that was good of like during the whole match, it's obviously like building up to Danielson winning the title, and then Swerve's like how he went about his business during it. I think it was like really dignified. Like, he put up like a great fight. He was like an amazing opponent, and he really made like Danielson earn it at the end, which I think is like all you can really do in like a big title match situation like that, when you're kind of passing it over, is not just like fall down. Like, you have to really push the other person to win it. And it takes part in like it's part story. It's part like, you know, how much the other people have to go through in order to overcome this mountain to win the title. When he's like, you know, looking at his kids and he's like, I love you. And you can hear him like shouting it out as he's getting like beaten.
Oh, that was my favorite part, man. When they had the kicks where Swerve kept like kicking him. And with each kick, Danielson's like, I love you. I love you.
like, I love you. You mean so much to me. Every single kick.
I was like welling up at that point, dude. I cried a little bit.
Yeah. I was like, I got to call my dad. But yeah, just like that bit of it, I thought it was just like, it's corny as hell, but that's like part of what's good about it, I think.
And it walked that line where it wasn't too much, where it didn't go into cringe. It was more just like, I believed it, you know. And I think putting over Swerve here, he did such a great job of being a great bad guy, of being the consummate heel to make this whole, you know, everyone just detest him, you know, because he was so ruthless, because he was like trying to hurt this guy in such a dramatic fashion in front of his family. You know, the universal thing is to be like, fuck you, dude, fuck you so much. We want to see this guy win. And I thought it was perfect.
Yeah, like everyone wants to see the family win. But yeah. And then, immediately turns to Swerve and just slaps the absolute shit out of him.
Oh, so good.
Christ. Just like an absolute thunderclap from that.
There was another great bit when Swerve did some sort of like fancy, like twisty kip up kind of thing. You know, sometimes I find his offense can be a bit convoluted, and he did one of these kind of things only for Danielson to just catch him with like maybe the biggest lariat I've ever seen Danielson do.
Yeah,
just shut it down immediately. Yeah. Just crunch him. It was great.
You did see, like, Swerve, like, they had a little bit of slow-motion footage there. Swerve take an absolute textbook back bump. Arms out, legs up, breathe out. just absolutely flattens him.
Oh, adored it. And I really did think with the family element that was part of it, where I almost got, like, flashbacks to Dark Side of the Ring, the documentary with Foley in front of his family with the big match against The Rock, where he just takes, like, 25 chair shots and his children are just getting, like, all of the trauma that they'll have to sort out in therapy later in their life.
Yeah, could you imagine like having that as a match and then having your children there and then having to tell your kids later when they become like, when they get older, you're just like, you know, violence is wrong. You can't solve anything with violence. It's like, well, Dad, that guy solved you pretty fucking well. So, yeah, that's the only, my only problem with it is just like the teaching point of your kids afterwards. Just like, oh, like, how do I teach my kids to be good? How do I teach my kids that violence isn't wrong when I take them to these shows and I put them like front and center?
I'm assuming they had a good talking before and after that, but I thought it was so good and really added to it.
Me and Uncle Swerve are just playing, you know, we're just playing.
Oh, man.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
And getting to see like the cattle mutilation, or maybe like so happy and I just thought the way that they threaded that back to him, you know, finally getting that LaBelle lock in, and man, fucking hats off. Excellent match. My only complaint was the fact that he was like bleeding after getting the like Death Valley driver onto the bell, where it was kind of like the back of his head really got donged, and then he came up and he's like bleeding from the front.
Yeah.
A little bit of me would have preferred if he had if you're going to bleed, it should be coming from the back of the head, but I think that's getting a bit pedantic here.
Yeah.
Overall, tremendous.
Yeah. Yeah, great match. Great match from the Padre. Which brings us to another amazing match. Oh, yeah, also congratulations to Daniel on winning.
Yes, yes. Like, but I was going to say the biggest thing for me that made me have the happy tears was fucking Final Countdown being back.
Oh, Christ. How big?
Just like the most epic entrance and win of all time. One of the greatest wrestling themes of all time. I think probably my favorite. You know, the fact that for the entrance we got like everyone like banging on those like steel barricades.
Yeah.
So brought me back to like Ring of Honor, man. Like, so magical.
But that was it. It was like his whole journey encapsulated in that moment, like, and everything he has now. It's amazing. Like, you know, he's got a family now, he's got this like legendary career, and then playing the Final Countdown again. So you're thinking back to when he was just like a dude wrestling in ROH, like obviously still like an amazing wrestler, but then like how far he's come now. It's just like all the emotions wrapped up in one when he won the AEW title. But yeah, props to him. Hats off. An amazing match to do it. It's not just another like big company title win. They did it really well.
Yeah, they definitely did.
And
yeah,
Both Swerve and Danielson put on an amazing match.
I agree.
They worked so well together. I'd really like to see more matches from them, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And just, like, I should probably start watching more Swerve matches in general. It's just not what, like, between, you know, the watching anything in CMLL and AAA, and then going back to, like, American wrestling where there's, like, one fall. Like, goddamn. Better they could do three falls.
Yeah, but that would be a treat. I would highly recommend. I liked his match against Hangman, that big crazy death match, Texas death match thing. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then now we're getting the rematch on All In, so that should be a lot of fun. But yeah, I was very impressed by Swerve here, and I definitely think that is easily the best Swerve match I've ever seen in my life. Absolutely fantastic Danielson match as well, that I'd put up there right with some of my favorite matches of his in Ring of Honor.
I still think the like I use like the unification titles as my absolute top one. Like, I and honestly I hadn't even seen that, the unification titles, until I had already finished wrestling. Like, I only ever watched it one day, and like a summary of it when I was like hanging out with Davis one day at Levi's house. And then I was like, oh, I gotta watch these things. And I realized, I was like, oh, I'd seen the first one, but I'd never watched it all the way through. And then, yeah, I watched it, and I was like, I went back and watched all these other feuds that I'd previously watched. And going like, are they doing what they did here? Like, are they carrying a story the whole way through? Like, some bits, yes. Some bits, they're doing it in a really like hokey kind of fashion where they're quickly bringing up something else, but then it's not really related to the match. It's like they're shoehorning it in there. Whereas like this match, I feel like it was organic. Like, it went in so well. And then like the corny bits that are there are like necessary, I think.
Yeah.
It was an amazing match on both wrestlers' part. And yeah, congrats to Danielson on your family and your fortune and your title.
What a lovely, lovely moment. And his funny son, like, just seeming like having the best time in the world playing with the confetti in the ring after the match. Yeah, oh my gosh.
Yeah. He's like, oh, he's happy. Yeah, no, that's good. But yeah, so speaking of other family affairs. The fun.
We come on to another match that took place back in May 5th of 1996, FMW Fighting Creation 96, the 7th anniversary show, before 33,231 fans at the big show spiritual home of FMW, that is Kawasaki Stadium. And this match has the coolest name I think any match has ever had in professional wrestling history. This is the No Ropes Barbed Wire Current Mine Explosion Double Hell Time Bomb Tornado Death Match. Wow. between Hayabusa and Masato Tanaka against Mr. Pogo and the greatest that there ever was, Terry Funk. And I adore this match as well. I think I maybe love it just as much as the aforementioned Danielson versus Swerve match. Again, as you mentioned, you really have to pay attention. Very slightly different matches here, but both very, very good.
Yeah. I have opinions on this match.
So can I ask, did you watch all of the promos with this? Because they're an essential element as well.
God, I wish I didn't. I watched like three leading up to, or two, sorry, and then the one that comes before the match. Just like, I watched the
subtitles.
Just with the subtitles. I was like, oh God. Yeah, because two or three minutes before it. Before the match, you get this little, this little promo package. And I'll tell you what, Mr. Pogo and Terry Funk sure do have heart.
Man, not the heart of a chicken like no, the mentor the of these chicken. Other guys, Onita.
Man, I just love how disconnected Pogo is, just like off to the side there, kind of like flexing, kind of stretching up, having no idea what's going on. Terry Funk goes for like 5 minutes, or goes for like 3 minutes or whatever. It's going on about the heart, all this like kind of disconnected speech. None of it's really making sense.
I thought it came together at the end.
Did it? I mean, in Terry Funk's kind of way.
I think he's... So it's an inter-promotional match here. This is like he's against FMW, but he's obviously a legend in Japan. He loves the Japanese fans. He hates Onita because of their past history. And he's here with a fellow dude from another promotion, Mr. Pogo from Wing. And they're both here to wreck shop to fuck up FMW and everyone that stands by Onita and just cause chaos.
Yeah, he can't go after Onita, but he can go after his dream.
Well, Onita's retired, so yeah, that's all he can do.
He can't go after Onita, but he can go after his dream and his little fucking chicken heart. God. I just want to bring chicken hearts. I just want to bring a poster to like with chicken hearts on it to like a bloody Japanese event. You all got chicken hearts. Chicken hearts, motherfuckers.
Oh my gosh. This era of middle-aged and crazy Terry Funk is one of my very favourites as well. So different to, classic Old Japan Terry or like Terry from, the Memphis that we were talking about last time from that tremendous match with him against Lawler. Just completely unhinged and amazing. And then we have the opponents being Hayabusa and Tanaka, who this is sort of like the part of their part where I guess Hayabusa is meant to be sort of like the replacement for Onita. Now that Onita's retired, he becomes like the big face top draw of FMW. But it's not that easy. He's not just going to come in and get it overnight. And I guess the story of this is basically the suffering of Hayabusa that Terry and Pogo are inflicting on him because he is the protege of Onita. And, as much as he fights and he shows some amazing, amazing fighting spirit, it's just not enough in the end. And he just gets absolutely dismantled, unmasked, humiliated, and the match ends with him crying in the back about how it wasn't enough and how he's embarrassed everybody, and I thought that was actually quite beautiful.
Yeah, like he really, well, this is the thing, like he's gone up against two, like, I really don't know who the fuck Mr. Pogo is, but like he's gone up against Terry Funk, this guy who's like, he's used to getting beaten up, bloodied, He's, you know, if you want to take him down in his arena of like throwing him into like barbed wire, throwing him onto explosions, just outright violence, you've really got to step up your game. You've really got to bring it all. So I went, like, how the match ended, I was, you know, with explosions, of course.
There were quite a few explosions.
But yeah, seeing him like cry in the back. But I think it was like, I think in a way it was good how it was like, I walked into this match just thinking, yeah, we'd just be able to crush him because we're, you know, we're these two great professional wrestlers in like in our prime, in great shape. Let's just get straight into it. But the level they had to step up to, I think them losing and then the emotions afterwards proves that they did have like a long way to go to be like to step into Onita's boots.
Yeah. And eventually Hayabusa would become that main guy to carry the company in the later 90s.
Yeah.
I mean, shortly after this, and he had an amazing run there, you know, through the remainder of the existence of FMW. But I do think, it was him getting that sympathy in this match. And I think if you look at it in that way, like this match... There's few examples of watching a crowd just like have, you know, care about a guy's suffering like this. Like, we both had, I guess Hayabusa got blown up. He got roasted with that ridiculous amount of fire from
Pogo
and Terry together. The double fire spit in probably the biggest, like, fire bit I've ever seen in wrestling. And
in that much like direct, like, you know how you see like the flash things, like the cane flat flash paper kind of stuff, and they're like, or you see like quick fire and then it's extinguished straight away. Like, this was probably like the most they've ever just left it in two blokes' hands. Here's how you don't go over the top, you know? And they're like, we're gonna go over the top.
He probably got third-degree burns.
Yeah, Christ, like, the amount of fire that was involved in that was just absolutely nuts.
Oh, man.
But, and then also, that brings us to your amazing picture here of capturing that, of the, what looks like there's two man dragons behind Hayabusa. Absolutely light the fucker up.
This was a bit of a challenge to do, because it was... Yeah, I really love the reference picture. It's like one of those all-time great ones. But, yeah, obviously the main thing of it is the fire, and then it's almost like everyone around it. Like, I really wanted that moment as well, because it really illustrates to me, like, the suffering of Hayabusa. You know, Terry and Pogo off to the side just blowing that fire. It was a bit tricky because obviously the fire is kind of taking the main prominence. So like the amount that you actually see of Terry isn't that much. But yeah, I think I was pretty happy with it in the end. I think it captured the overall vibes.
Yeah, yeah. I think you've done a really good job here, Chris, and especially trying to capture like a slowly roasting Hayabusa. Just like put the poor boy on a hog roast,
man. Just this poor man. And could we speak as well about? So by the sounds of it, is this your first time watching Mr. Pogo?
I haven't seen Mr. Pogo before. No.
Okay, so
it's just.
So it was a bit of a surprise when the sickle came out.
Well, I'm not surprised seeing weapons in matches. I am surprised when they use the sharp end of them. Man, Tanaka, just like every single time I see him, he just goes above and beyond. He's got amazing offense. He's got like amazing selling. He's just like one of my all-time favorite Japanese wrestlers to watch. Then he's just like, oh yeah, go ahead. Just at one time, there's like a handsaw gets taken out, and then like the sickle gets taken out, and I haven't seen like you know, there's a couple of deathmatch shows we've seen with like, yeah, they will use the weapons and the sharp ends of the weapons, they'll kind of gimmick them. I've never seen someone outright just go like, oh yeah, I'm actually going to stab you with this.
Just, he he got sliced to all fuck. Like, you look at, like, Tanaka from later in his career, and he's got all those, like, gnarly scars. You're like, man, that dude looks pretty badass. Pretty sure they all came from this match.
Oh, mate, like, he used that handsaw on him, like, on his lower back and on his shoulder, where he, like, put it on him. And it wasn't like he, like, went back and forth like a gimmick kind of thing. He put it on his back and then just, like, ripped backwards. And then just, like, I get pissed off when I accidentally, like, cut my thumb with a saw. Or, like, when the saw jumps and it'll cut my finger or whatever. But this guy just, like, oh, yeah, he's just going to cut away for a little bit. Yeah, he's just going to have a little slashy slash. That's fine. Yeah, so... But that leads us into, like, one of the parts when he went to, like, when Mr. Pogo went to, like, pick up a weapon again. Hayabusa just absolutely, like, sprints in, grabs him, and then rolls him into the, like, rolls him off the ring and then into the, I guess it's a control mine?
Oh, yeah, the landmine. Yeah. Fuck, that was sick.
Yeah, so what part of the match was that? Was that the current mine or the double hell?
I don't know. Maybe I assume that, yeah, let's say it was the current mine.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I'm still confused as to what the double hell was.
That was just the match in general. That was the general vibes.
Oh, but, yeah, like, that, like, little sacrificial moment where he's, like, willing to take the bullet for Tanaka was pretty cool, where he just, yeah, just jumps on him, saves his mate from taking even more damage.
Oh, the bit when Hayabusa dove over the landmines, like, on the wire, like, over to the outside to catch him was such an all-time cool moment.
Like, immediately after, wasn't it? He, like, rolled him onto the mines. He, like, grabbed him and they both rolled onto the mines together. Which is romantic as fuck, by the way. Why have we not done that, Chris? and then immediately after, he's, like, he gets back up and then he just sprints and then just jumps over the mines. And then, yeah, gives him this cool crossbody.
So sick.
But I think it's, yeah, good, where they get, like, the audience kind of gets more and more sympathy for Hayabusa as it goes on, and then goes, like, oh, yeah, you know, they, like, accept him more and more as not just, like, they obviously already love him, like, he's Hayabusa, it's amazing. But then, yeah, stepping into the shoes of Onita, yeah, he really goes above and beyond in this match.
Yeah, like, a lot of weight on the shoulders. You got to think that, so, into this, all of the Kawasaki stadiums, all of the big shows that they've had in FNW's history up to this point were all on the back of Onita. And then Onita has retired to go off and, you know, he's obviously had a heck of a lot of injuries himself and has endured his own amount of suffering. But he's gone off to, I think he attempted to be a movie star before going to, like, politics and stuff, before he eventually came back to FMW after his retirement and became Mr. Liar because he went back on his word of retiring. This, you think about the pressure that must be on the shoulders at this point on Hayabusa, because he's the one who's the new face of the company, and it's like the first ever Kawasaki Stadium show they've run that wasn't all about Onita. I can understand why they did what they did, where it's like this is the part where the crowd gets the sympathy for Hayabusa before, you know, in the future is where he really gets his big show wins.
Yeah. Can I just say that if they're ever to do, or any current company is ever to do no ropes, barbed wire, current mine explosion, double hell, time bomb. Please don't put on a 5-minute fucking alarm.
See, I may be the only one, but I love that. I was like, man, then you get down to that last, like, minute and the siren starts going extra crazy.
No, like, oh, fuck. Like, I had it on at the 5-minute alarm. Because, yeah, we've watched our time bomb matches before.
Mm-hmm. The big Terry versus Onita one.
Yeah, we watched that, and then the 5-minute alarm. I was like, I can't listen to this. This is too much for me. It's stimulation overload. And then the last minute goes, and it goes nuts. Just, oh mate, that's my double hell.
That's the double hell part. That's the double hell.
Double hell is for you, the viewer. Hell for them, and it's hell for you. Yeah. both sight-wise and ears.
I definitely want to put over the quality of the explosions in this. For people who might be used to the explosions of like the no rope exploding barbed wire match between like Kenny Omega and John Moxley, or some of the other ones where the explosions are less than satisfying. Man, these explosions are where it's at. And then that bloody where the ring actually goes off. Amazing, but then I think my favorite part was like just the smoke and ash everywhere after it. Like it's this man, what a fucking visual!
But there was like a bit of a misleading part in the start where Funk gets like hung over the barbed wire, and there's like a little explosion that goes off. Mm. You're like, oh, okay, it's going to be one of those where there's like a little bit of there's going to be like a little pop every time that every time they hit it or whatever. And you know, the first time they roll onto the mine, I suppose, and it just absolutely goes off. It's like a massive explosion, huge amount of smoke. I was like, oh, actually, that was really cool.
Yeah,
like they just go all into the smoke.
See, my understanding of the Terry one, the way that it made sense in my brain, was that the charge didn't have a sufficient amount of time to re-energize after the previous rope explosion. That was, I can't remember who took the barbed wire rope shortly before that, but it hadn't got back up to its full power. You know, like the Godzilla shooty thingy?
Godzilla, his mouth laser.
Yeah, that thing. Basically, it's the same premise, I feel. It's
spicy breath. Yeah, but I just it was quite misleading at the start. When we got you got the one good explosion, then you got a little one, and you're like, oh, okay, they're done with it. Nah, bring it straight back, and then right at the end where there's like a massive explosion goes off, it was like, oh, sick. That was sick. And then they keep wrestling.
Yeah,
it keeps going.
I mean, everyone's been blown to all hell, but not enough to where it's killed their fighting spirit, my friend.
No, I honestly feel from this point onwards, every single match needs a time bomb on it. And they need like a guy. They need like a couple of like riflemen standing on the ramp just in case they try and run away. It's just like, no, get back in the ring. Oh, shoot. It's just like, please, I've got kids. I love my family so much. So like, get back in the fucking ring. If you don't want to get blown up, you win within 20 minutes.
Oh my gosh. But like somehow this even escalated from there, because yeah, that was when the fire came in. That was when we got the crazy like Hayabusa being burnt to a crisp. They then lit a bloody chair on fire for him to get like pile driven onto the chair. That still didn't finish it. And then we finally get, which I thought was very fitting, the big finishing move of Atsushi Onida. The fire thunder power bomb executed in double team fashion by Pogo and Terry Funk was the final thing that eventually put poor Hayabusa away. And man, I thought that was the perfect finish. You know, it's like so poetic.
Yeah, it's just like if you want to be the man, this is what it feels like. I guess like this is coming straight from Onida himself. Like, you want to be this guy? Here you go. Here's his finishing move. You take it, prick.
And then like them cutting off his mask with the fucking saw.
Yeah, I didn't know why they did that, but I was like, okay.
Just adding to the shame, I know that, man.
Like, completely cut him down so he can build himself back up, but with like, I guess like just with the saw in general, they're just like, oh, we're gonna take it off like this.
How painful did that look?
Christ, I was literally just gritting my teeth watching it. But yeah, so like, yeah, both matches, real fun watching experience. But yeah, don't immediately watch one after the other. You're gonna watch
these. Probably wouldn't recommend that.
Yeah, like build up to it. Watch like a couple of death matches. Watch some New Jack or whatever. Go into that before you watch the Danielson match. Watch a couple of your favorite feuds where there's like a big off at the end, like big feud title matches. And build yourself up with a Swerve Strickland and Danielson match. But yeah, don't just back-to-back them.
Probably wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah.
Oh, dude. The The funniest part about this was, so I picked this this big crazy FMW mattress, the main event last match that I played for the last wrestling club, and you know, because again, you know, what are you going to do to follow that? Nothing. And then of all people that I saw upstairs at the bar was bloody your old roommate Kate.
Yeah.
And then her mates, they're like, what are you doing here? I'm like, oh, we've got a little wrestling club going on downstairs. Please, if you want to come in and join us, you're more than welcome. And yeah. Then they were like, yeah, sure, why not? And then they ended up walking in as the this exploding double hell time bomb, electrified barbed wire death match is going on. Mind you, I think her friends, this was the first ever professional wrestling match they had ever seen. They were just like, oh, so are all matches like this?
Do they always do this kind of stuff? Yeah. Oh, bless her. How's Mike? There's a barrel of laughs.
I just thought that was so funny.
Yeah. Yeah, Kate's been to a few wrestling shows before, and every single time she's just absolute chaos in the audience. If you look out, she just like shouts abuse back at her. Or she yells out like, hey, stop! What are you doing? Just cheer or boo like everyone else. Stop being like chaotic.
Excellent quality.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Truly is. Two amazing matches. Two amazing pieces of art to accompany with it. I'm really liking these double headers. I think they're very good.
I know. Thanks, it's dude.
You on as an artist to pump out more art, but good.
No, I'm happy to do so. No, thanks so much, man. Like, yeah, I really do think the thing that links these two things together, both epic big time matches that when you really look at it have some beautiful stories attached to them as well. So
yeah.
As much as they might be slightly different, they are the unifying things, at least as far as I can see. But thanks so much for joining me, my dude.
Thanks so much for having me. I would like to think of the common factor that links these two as family. Hayabusa, Daddy Onita, and then Daniel Bryan is traumatized kid.
Yes. Fair. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you so much for having me on, Chris. It's always a pleasure. It's always lovely.
No stress, dude. I had a ball. And, yeah, like I said, no one else would want to watch this eclectic combo of matches with.
Well, I'm always down for some funk.
Always.
Yeah, always down for some funk. But, yeah, all right, I better skadoodle.
All right, take care, my dude. I'll see you next time.
All right, see you then, brother. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, there we bloody well go. I think that did a lovely job of capturing the respective goings on of these two matches. Thank you again, David. I next time need to make sure I leave it recording after I hung out with David there and push stop on the old recording machine. There was some absolute magic that occurred that I'm very sad wasn't able to be captured in audio form. But maybe I shouldn't have told you that. I don't know. I really love that perhaps this FMW match, David did not get quite the same kind of joy from it that I did, you know, especially the promos and everything. But you know, it was an experience, and I think there's something bloody lovely about, you know, in this world of wrestling, this eclectic world that I'm always on about, that there's all sorts of stuff that, you know, some of us might enjoy different elements of others, but I think the magic of it is being able to converse and, you know, being able to talk about it with one another, and that's what this show is all about. I feel one of the most fantastic moments of that match that we didn't mention was the end when Hayabusa has been just maimed. Pogo and Terry are the winners, and Onita does actually make an appearance from the crowd. You know, he's there, like, throws a bottle or something. He's all sorts of indignant, and he's pissed off, but obviously caring about his fallen protege in Hayabusa, but he's yelling at at Terry and Pogo, and I don't know if it's Terry, I think it's Pogo actually. The closing line of it is just like, get lost, Onita, Hayabusa's already dead, or something like that, which tickled me so much. Oh man, tremendous stuff. I'd like to thank you guys as well for sticking it out, listening to this show. I hope you got some enjoyment out of it. You know, hope you watched these matches perhaps, and have your own thoughts on it. If you do, bloody feel welcome to comment or just message me or whatever. I always want to hear your thoughts too. And especially if you guys have got the itch to do a little art of these matches as well. If you've done a little drawing or whatnot, I want to see it. Send it through. If you send it to me, and if you'd like, I'll be happy to share that bad boy. I love the community element that we have here with the wrestling art. It's something we can all do together. So as always, I hope you guys are having fun and doing your own thing, got your own creative projects that you're chipping away at, and enjoying it. This is the most important part. I'd like to say a big thank you also to the great team at Social Suplex, socialsuplex.com, the home to this podcast, as well as a variety of other fun wrestling podcasts, from the New Japan podcast, Keeping It Strong Style, to One Nation Radio, All Things Elite, Imps WWE Adventure, Tunnel Talk, the Trish and Sarah podcast. All sorts of stuff. So if you want more wrestling audio goodness, that's the place. And yeah, I very much appreciate them, letting me do this thing and me talk into a microphone in my office. I work from home, I work alone. So I kind of miss people a little bit, so it's nice for me to be able to have this kind of like social outlet, I guess. Keeps me kind of sane, or it's capturing my madness. I don't know. which way we're going here, but I'm having fun. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so. You can do little things like being subscribed to the official Chris Things Wrestling Art with Chris Things feed on the iTunes. Leaving reviews, that kind of stuff helps. Even just liking and commenting and stuff on my Instagram things or Twitter or wherever you might be. I always appreciate it. If you would like to support in a financial sense, I believe you can do donations as part of this, but you can also buy my art. That's a thing. If you dig said art, whether it be the match of the week or the different various original artworks and paintings and things that I do, you can buy it. You can sometimes buy originals, even you can buy fancy art prints, the premium ones of which I actually send out myself, so I'll include a little special present for you as part of that, as a little thank you. But all that at christhings.com.au is the place for all of those things. But no pressure. If you feel like it, great. If you don't, whatever. But I hope you're having fun. And I also do commissions. So if you ever have a gift that you need to get for a loved one, or just a gift that you want to get yourself, something just to make you feel a little bit special. Like sometimes in this life we don't give ourselves enough of these little flowers, that Twin Peaks Agent Cooper line of taking the time every now and then to just do something a little bit special for yourself. Well, that could be commissioning Chris to draw up your favorite match or wrestler. I think that'd be pretty sick. Yeah, you can do that. I think my rates are pretty affordable. Yeah, I have a lot of fun doing it. I love commission work. I love getting to get whatever weird and wacky, wonderful conceptual ideas from you guys that I can then bring to life in Chris Things form. So if you feel like doing that, hit me up, swing me an email, swing me a message, however you want to do it. Let's get this going. I sincerely appreciate you guys being here for this ride, for this journey. I feel like we're doing this together, you know? I appreciate you. I think that's the main thing. Thank you very much. And I think it's time to get out of here. All right, well, till next week, guys. I hope you have fun. I hope you if you feel up to it, do some creative things. Do a little bit of drawing. I'm all about it. I'm all about trying to spread that good word of the art, especially the wrestling art. All right, guys. Until next week, I am Chris Things. Farewell.
I do the hammer lock.